It was a complete and total exoneration.
This week, Donald Trump had one of the best days of his presidency.
You have a good weekend? Oh, yeah.
I had a pretty good weekend.
Not as good as Donald Trump's weekend, but still pretty good.
The U.S. Attorney General announced that special counsel Robert Mueller had finished his long investigation, and he'd found that there was no evidence of collusion between the U.S. president's campaign and Russian efforts to meddle in the 2016 U.S. presidential election.
There was no collusion with Russia. There was no obstruction.
This was devastating news to those who believed, those who hoped, that Mueller's report might lead to a Watergate-style end to the Trump administration. Trump's critics have long viewed him as an aberration in United States presidential politics, a man emotionally unsuited and intellectually unfit for the job. Trump's collusion, they believe, would finally prove his illegitimacy.
Now, Democrats and those who dislike the president may be disappointed, but for the country, having a president who hasn't conspired with an enemy is certainly very good news.
However, as Trump's Attorney General William Barr wrote, quoting directly from Mueller,
"While this report does not conclude that the president committed a crime, it also does not exonerate him," which Trump summed up this way.
It was a complete and total exoneration.
That said, the Barr letter does not say what the president is saying it says.
But though it did not find evidence of collusion, Mueller's investigation did make revelations that in another time, about another president, might have been fatal. Evidence that Russia did interfere on his behalf, that Trump's campaign appeared to be aware of this, and that many of the people around him sought to hide that fact.
This was an illegal takedown that failed. And hopefully, somebody's going to be looking at the other side. So it's complete exoneration, no collusion, no obstruction. Thank you very much.
This is Please Explain. I'm Nick O'Malley.
We can never let this happen to another president again. I can tell you that. I say it very strongly.
This week, Mueller's report, an indictment on U.S. democracy, or yet another Trump scandal tossed on the scrap heap. Joining me today is the U.S. correspondent for the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age, Matthew Knott, from the U.S. Matt, where are you?
I'm here in New York, Nick.
And Chris Sapone, who is the digital editor for the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age. Chris, thank you.
Thanks, Nick. Good to be here.
Chris, can we start with you? Could you give us a fast refresher on how we got here? How did we get to a place where an investigation began into the fairly wild notion that the U.S. president colluded with the Russian president to win office?
So if you cast your mind back to the 2016 election and the chaos of that time, as Trump ran for president in his unconventional way, using social media, making outrageous statements, there was this concern that some of what Trump was saying was seen as being a bit favorable to the Kremlin's position. So as that was happening, it was revealed that a private sector former British spy named Christopher Steele had compiled a dossier of alleged connections between Donald Trump and the Kremlin, places where there were sort of overlaps and where there were interactions. This opposition research that was originally paid for by a right-wing publication in the U.S. was later funded by the Democrats as Trump got the Republican nomination. And from there, it continued to bounce around U.S. media, and it was considered the worst kept secret in American media. Eventually, BuzzFeed published it in full. And once that happened, the concerns about Trump and any connection between Trump and the Kremlin really flared. It was after that, and after Trump was elected, that the special counsel was named to investigate this, the alleged connections between Donald Trump and his campaign and the Kremlin.
Matt, 22 months later, on Friday afternoon, Mueller, who led the investigation, let it be known that he'd finished his report. But some people might not understand. No one's actually seen that report. What exactly was released on Friday afternoon?
Well, on Friday afternoon, we found out that the investigation, the probe, was over, and that Mueller had handed a report to the Attorney General, whose name is William Barr. And so, yes, as far as we know, William Barr has read it. Some people in the Justice Department have seen it. The Deputy Attorney General has seen it. But we haven't seen it. We don't know how long it is. We don't know if it's 10 pages or 100 pages. And what we found out that night was that there weren't any new indictments coming as a result of this probe. So that made it clear that neither Trump or anyone in his family was going to be indicted as part of this. And that was a very clear clue that there wasn't going to be a big finding about Russian collusion. And on Sunday, the Attorney General put out a 4-page letter summary announcing that fact, that Mueller had not found any collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia.
So suddenly this investigation that Trump has claimed from the outset was a vile witch hunt, he now lauds as a very successful investigation, and he claims that it has completely exonerated him. Is that the case? Has Trump been completely exonerated, as he says?
No, absolutely not. And there were very few direct quotes in the 4-page summary, but one of the two direct quotes from Mueller was that on the question of obstruction of justice, which was the second key thread of the investigation, did Trump obstruct justice in the way he's behaved? Mueller explicitly says in the report that he is not finding Trump guilty of a crime, but neither is he exonerating him, which of course prompts a huge amount of interest and speculation into what is in there and why, if he cleared him on the question of collusion, did he not clear him on the question of obstruction? And we have no idea at this point why.
So, Matt, now we're in the position where, according to Barr anyway, Mueller's report at once finds no evidence or not sufficient evidence for indictments of collusion with Russia, but on the other hand, leaves open the question as to whether or not his campaign or members of his family sought to obstruct justice. Can you clarify that for us?
Yes, well, this is the most confusing thing, and it's actually brought Robert Mueller in for a fair bit of criticism. Everyone notes that we haven't read the report, but the key job of a prosecutor is to decide whether there's an indictable offence or not, and instead, on this point, he hasn't come to a decision, which was his key job. That, you know, it was your one job, Robert Mueller, really. And he hasn't decided. Now, this passed it on then upwards to the Attorney General, who was appointed by Trump not very long ago. And he has said, no, there's no case for obstruction, in large part because there's no underlying crime in relation to collusion. Now, this is very debatable legally because, yes, while there was no crime in relation to collusion, lots of other crimes have been exposed as a result of Mueller's report. We've seen lots of other people, Trump's allies, going to jail. We've seen all types of other interesting information coming out about the campaign finance violations with Stormy Daniels. So if someone wanted to argue it another way, they would say that by Trump's behavior could have been obstructing justice in that way. And we really don't know what has gone on until we see more of the report.
It's probably worth here getting into a little bit about this man Barr, the Attorney General. Chris, can you explain why some Democrats and critics of the president are a little bit concerned about a potential conflict of interest on his behalf?
Well, before he was named as Attorney General, he had written a paper that basically dismissed or expressed some skepticism for the ability for a president to be indicted. And so now this is an issue that's sort of longstanding in U.S. politics. But the fact that he had written this seemed to signal to some people, particularly those predisposed to cynicism, that he was doing this ahead of a potential being named as the Attorney General. So it was basically making sure that he's signaling his view on this particular issue of importance to Donald Trump. And then he himself is named Attorney General. That's an area of concern. And that is something that you've already heard some Democrats after the Mueller probe was handed in say that they want Barr to testify himself. Of course, they want to see the report. And yeah, this is just another controversy that's just built off of the existing one.
So to be clear, we have a Republican Attorney General appointed by Trump, who is appointed after he has already made it publicly clear that he believes that the president either is not or cannot be guilty of this crime.
That's right.
Is that right?
That's right.
And Robert Mueller knows this very well and decided to essentially leave that ball in his court, which is even stranger.
And is it the case then that we're going to see, this is not going away, that we're going to see an investigation into the investigation. Is that right, Matt? Are we going to see Mueller and Barr called to testify?
Yes, this is going to be drawn out, I'd think, for weeks, if not months. There's going to be a battle about how much of this report comes out. Now, many Democrats are getting on the front foot and saying, we want the whole thing. You can see reasons why potentially large parts of it wouldn't be released publicly, because Mueller may be explaining why he decided not to charge certain people and have unflattering information in there that would be unfair to put out there. This was the whole controversy with James Comey and Hillary Clinton, that he cleared her of wrongdoing while also criticizing her at the same time. So this is going to become a very drawn-out partisan fight. Now, Trump publicly has said he's happy for the whole thing to be released, but we haven't seen it yet.
Well, this is an interesting point, isn't it? Because Trump has said that, and the House has voted unanimously to release the report, but mysteriously, the Senate, which is controlled by the Republicans, have not. Does that suggest to you, Matt, that the signals from the White House privately to the Senate majority have been different from the public signals?
Yes, definitely. There's definitely an element of what's being said publicly and what's happening privately, and it's definitely going to be a power struggle between the different branches of government here.
So at the end of all this, Matt, at the end of 22 months of investigation, we seem to be in a situation where the Democrats and the Republicans have retreated to their corners to slug it out politically, and there is no clarity. Is that the case, or is that too harsh an observation?
No, that's true, and that's the very disappointing thing. The thing about Robert Mueller that all fair-minded people agreed on was that he was an independent, experienced, authoritative figure who could be trusted to reach a fair conclusion. Trump didn't say that, but anyone who's had an experience with him has high regard for him. And on the question of obstruction, he hasn't come back with a clear finding. He's punted it up to a political appointee. And so this just brings the whole issue back into a very partisan terrain, with Republicans believing what they want to believe and Democrats believing what they want to believe, rather than giving the kind of bipartisan closure that was hoped for from this process.
Chris, can you talk us through what happens next in terms of investigations into the Trump campaign and Trump himself? This is not the only investigation going on, is it?
No, it's not. There are ones that have been launched both in New York, from the state of New York, into Trump's dealings, his real estate dealings and holdings. There's also ones from the Attorneys General of Maryland and the District of Columbia regarding favors or perceived favors that Trump has done foreign powers in return for gifts. So it is very much it is just one stage, and as Matt says, it does very little to resolve these differences of views between these camps, between the Democrats and the Republicans. And there's something about the fact that, you know, when people don't have certainty about what the facts are, their mind fills in the blanks. And we saw that in all the months of the Mueller probe of the special counsel, where people assumed that Mueller was acting in a certain way and would give a certain conclusion to it. And instead, that hasn't happened. So now the uncertainty just filters out into new areas. And these investigations will continue to dog Trump, presumably through his first term.
And Matt, finally, what does it tell us about the state of politics in the United States that you can have an investigation that finds that whether or not Trump colluded, the president of Russia and his intelligence services actively sought to install President Trump, and that after that, the Republican Party now celebrates this as a great victory? Are we still in a very strange political world?
Definitely. And I think there was a feeling, though, that the question that Russia was doing a lot of meddling has become more accepted over time by both sides of politics. And the big unresolved question was whether there was active collusion. Just on that, I've just been thinking back to doing reporting before the last elections, and with ordinary voters, the kind of swinging independent voters, how Russia and this whole issue never came up with ordinary people. It was an obsession for journalists and people on cable news, but it it seemed to be of remarkably little interest to people out there compared to things like immigration or healthcare or the economy. So to expect that this will change the fundamentals of American politics is going a bit far.
Thank you both very much for shedding light on a complex situation which looks like it is still a long way from resolution. Thanks to our guests this week, Matthew Knott from the US and Chris Zappone.
Thanks.
No worries at all.
Hi, I'm Jess Irvine. Thanks for listening to Please Explain. The Sydney Morning Herald and Age newsrooms are home to the country's most experienced economics editors and reporters, delivering trusted news and analysis. But we can't do it without you. Our subscribers get unlimited access to our award-winning independent journalism, plus exclusive behind-the-scenes stories you can't get anywhere else. Subscribe today and support news you can trust.
So what does it all mean? The report is in, or at least the report on the report is in, and the political warfare over its implications has begun. To discuss how Mueller's findings might now play out in American politics, I'm joined by Tara Settmayer. Settmayer is a former staffer to the fiercely conservative Congressman Dinah Rohrabacher, who lost his seat in the last election. She's a political commentator with CNN, among other outlets. During the 2016 election campaign, she gained a reputation as a key conservative critic of President Donald Trump. Tara, can we start with the question of impeachment?
I think for the immediate future, absolutely. Given that we haven't seen the entire Mueller report, it's only a summary by the Attorney General, but the political wind is out of the sails for any talk of impeachment for Democrats at this point, given that the president was seemingly exonerated on the issue of collusion. Still an open question on the obstruction of justice, but there wasn't enough there to give Democrats the political will to move forward with an impeachment. That's very difficult to put the country through. And Nancy Pelosi made it clear a few weeks ago, even before the report came out, that he wasn't worth it, which were her exact words. So I think for some of the people who were running on the idea that impeaching President Trump would be something Democrats would do in short order, need to reevaluate that. After 2018, the polling showed that most voters, including Democratic voters, most voters cared about healthcare, immigration, the economy, and government corruption in that order. The idea of the Russia investigation, the Mueller report, that ranked 10th. So most of the American people really were not voting based on the results of the Mueller report. And Democratic strategists know this going into 2020.
This has been a problem for the Democratic Party, though. They appear to have been blindsided by or captivated by the politics at the risk of ignoring the policy. These should be their strengths. Will this change, do you think, going forward?
Well, I think it forces the Democrats to have to come to a certain reckoning that they cannot just run against Donald Trump. They have to present an agenda, a governing agenda to the American people if they stand any chance of taking him out in the election in 2020. Nancy Pelosi is a very shrewd politician. She's been around a long time. She understands this. Some of the newbies in Congress, they don't understand this, and they're going to have to learn.
So how will Democrats and how will Republicans as well use the report or the report on the report in the coming months in both fundraising and in these early phases of campaigning?
The Republican rank and file would prefer not to talk about this anymore. It's been an albatross over the party and the presidency for the last 22 months. They don't want to talk about that. They want to talk about the successes in the economy, how well the economy is doing under President Trump's leadership. That's what they want to talk about. Kitchen table issues that affect everyday people. Now, President Trump is very different. He doesn't approach politics the same way. That's an understatement.
Yes.
He doesn't approach politics the same way as your traditional politician. That's why a lot of people voted for him. They wanted someone different and who was going to tear it all down and do something different. I don't happen to agree with the president's politics. I think he's disgraceful in his behavior in the Oval Office. And you know, decency has seemingly left the building. And the Republican Party has enabled him in doing this because they're afraid of a primary challenge, or they're afraid of the president tweeting something against them. And then his supporters attack them and they lose office. So for the president, he's been clear that he's spiking the football. He thinks that this summary is total exoneration. That's not actually true. And they're going to keep it as secret as they can for as long as they can, because I would assume that there is some damaging information, maybe not criminal, but some damaging information there that doesn't make the Trump campaign look very good or the president look very good on the issue of obstruction. But he thinks he's going to go out there and tell everyone, which he's already been doing, that it's total exoneration and that now we need to turn the tables and go after the investigators or open up new investigations still into Hillary Clinton and, you know, folks under the Obama administration. It's utterly ridiculous and really off message. I think people are, you know, have fatigue. There's, you know, Russia collusion fatigue here, but the president is his own strategist and he's going to do whatever the hell he wants, no matter what anybody tells him.
This was going to be the first great defeat of the Democrats after Trump was elected, wasn't it? Because he was going to come out and talk about infrastructure and they would be forced to agree with him and back him.
Correct. And what happened? That it went away in one or two tweets about God knows what. But, you know, it was so the president has an opportunity to really ride the momentum of controlling the narrative of the no collusion determination. And it seems as though he's attempting to do that with his introduction of let's try to, you know, repeal and replace Obamacare again. They've resurrected the issue of health care. That may be handing a win to the Democrats, because the Democrats like that issue. Like I said, that was the number one issue for people in the midterms. The Republicans had 2 years to fix Obamacare or replace it, and they didn't. So I think that the Republicans are dreading that debate. And the Democrats are looking forward to it on health care. But then the president turns around and talks about how it was an illegal investigation and how we need to, you know, investigate the investigators. That's not good messaging.
So Trump, one of his key attributes, or to his critics anyway, one of the things that has caused him the most misery is he seems to have this political superpower. He seems free of the political gravity that affects all other politicians in the Democratic world. Does this change, do you believe?
You know, it's tough to say. It so far, it's clear that nothing has been able to take him down. A lot of the norms and institutions that have been in place for many years and things that people have respected have gone right out the window under Donald Trump, with the enabling of the Republican Party behind him. And I think that's just an act of cowardice by those in the Republican Party who know better. I've been in Republican politics for over 20 years, and I'm horrified by how the level of hypocrisy and the level of just craven political action that the Republicans have engaged in to enable Donald Trump in really chipping away at our democratic norms, institutions, and ideals. So I don't know what it's going to take for them to finally peel away. We recently had this controversy over a national emergency declaration in the United States, where many of us thought that that was an overreach of executive power by the president by trying to redistribute funds. That's the role of the Congress, and that's the legislative branch, and the founding fathers separated that out for a reason, so that the presidency, the executive, did not have power of the purse. That was for Congress. Republicans railed against Barack Obama when he tried to do similar executive overreach things. Not quite. He never did a national emergency like this, but things with immigration that people felt as though it was an act of executive overreach by circumventing Congress. Those Republicans fell in line with Donald Trump with this what I consider a fake national emergency over immigration and the southern wall, the wall on the southern border. That was discouraging. Now, you did see some Republican senators step up and say, no, this is unconstitutional. This is setting a terrible precedent. But that was only 12 out of how many senators? There were only 14 in the House of Representatives out of 197, I believe. That is a disgrace.
So Trump's authority in the Republican Party remains. Can you see a never Trump candidate coming through in the primaries?
As much as I would like to see that, I don't see anyone on the horizon that has the ability to be a spoiler for Donald Trump. The ability to raise money is very difficult. The Republican National Committee has basically merged into one operation with the president's reelection campaign, and they've made it, they're changing the rules so that it makes it virtually impossible for a Republican primary challenger. So the likelihood of it coming from the right, a challenge to the presidency, is very, very unlikely. If someone were to do that, they wouldn't really stand a chance. They would have to have the money the way, like, I say, a Michael Bloomberg or someone like that, that's a billionaire, that could self-finance. Michael Bloomberg's already said that he has no desire to run at this point, and he would obviously run as a Democrat. But, and I don't see anyone equivalent to that with deep pockets deep enough to be able to finance their own campaign to even put up a challenge to Trump on that side. So, no.
So despite findings that there was not at least not enough evidence to find that Trump committed any of the crimes that have been alleged, but that he did obstruct justice, or that members of his administration sought to obstruct justice, or campaign sought to obstruct justice, it looks as though in a couple of years' time we're going to see a unified Republican Party behind Donald Trump take on the Democrats in a general election.
Some of the three main states that Donald Trump won, because it was very close. A lot of people don't realize Donald Trump only won by 77,000 votes in three states, in Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Michigan. That, you know, he was able to win those electoral votes to ultimately win, but it was by very little. In the state of Michigan, he only won by 11,000 votes. So for Democrats, there's a real opportunity because Donald Trump is currently under 50% in those three states. A lot of Republicans who didn't like Donald Trump hated Hillary Clinton more and were willing to give him a shot. You don't have that dynamic this time around. So I think re-election is going to be a little bit more difficult for Donald Trump.
Tara Settmayer, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks to our guests this week, Matthew Knott from the US, Chris Sapone, and Tara Settmayer. If you know someone who'd enjoy this week's episode, make sure you share it with them, or better yet, grab their phones and get them subscribed to get new episodes every week. Please Explain is brought to you by the newsrooms of the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age. Support the work we do. You can find the link to sign up in our show notes, or just search subscribe, Sydney Morning Herald, or The Age. If you want to get in touch, you can. Our email is in the show notes. This episode is produced and edited by Nicole Priestell and David Escort. Technical assistance from Yuji Shimada. Special thanks to Amelia McGuire. And Tom McKendrick is our head of audio. I'm Nick. Thanks for listening.